Chapter 20. Aspen. With a silent exchange of glances, Aspen and Tessel backed out of the cell, leaving their companion to his mourning. Tessel hitched a thumb to the right, indicating that she would go back over the break room and the smaller of the two offices. Aspen nodded and returned to the larger office. Even though the three of them had gone over the rooms quite thoroughly, Aspen still felt like they were missing something. There was simply no way that a nest of vamps could be living under Bright. His eyes shot to the door. That was it. That was what was bothering him. Under. Running back out of the room, he called Tessel's name. The half-dwarf's blonde head, her awesomely ugly horned helm slightly askew, popped out of the break room door a moment later. Somehow, Aspen couldn't help but chuckle at the image. Putting your feet up, were you? She stuck her tongue out at him, then seemed to realize what she'd done and clapped her hands over her mouth. Her pale cheeks went bright red. Aspen laughed again but shook his head, sobering. I had an idea, he said, and pointed to the open cell door. Vaughn was still inside, gathering up his sister's pathetic remains into a bundle that fit in the remnants of her tattered dress. When they entered, he looked up, then stood, struggling as if the weight in his arms was nearly unbearable. He held the bundle out to Tessel. Lady Tessel, I ask you this. Please protect my sister until this night is done. I must discover where her husband and father are buried, and reunite them in death, as I could not in life. The warrior mage, face solemn, accepted the package, which rustled with the dry sounds of old paper and sticks. The sad parcel vanished into her inventory, and Vaughn and Tessel turned their attention back to Aspen. An expression of fury drove the sorrow from Vaughn's face, and it sharpened into as inhuman a mask as Aspen had ever seen it. Even when fighting, Vaughn had never looked so fierce. You could tell he fought only because he was attacked, not out of any desire for violence. Now though, his chin firmed to elvish sharpness, and his cheeks seemed to sink as they tightened, bringing his high cheekbones into sharp relief. Even his winged brows dropped over his suddenly frozen gray eyes, which gleamed like a cat's in the shadowed cell. Lord Aspen, you said you had an idea. Do you know where the monsters that committed this atrocity hide? The musical lilt that Vaughn's native wood elf tongue usually gave his speech was now a sibilant hiss that lengthened his vowels and cut his consonants short. Aspen nodded. He would have liked to reach out and offer the young elf a consoling grip on his shoulder, or even a hug, if their relationship had been closer. As it was, all he had to offer was a chance at vengeance. He looked around the cell. Vampires cannot bear the sun. None of Plum's little spies mentioned hearing rumors of strange goings-on at night. So how do the vampires get here? How do these corrupt guards manage to communicate with them so easily? Certainly they may be sending messages through some higher power, and indeed, it is likely that such low-level commoners have some more powerful sponsor. That, however, does not explain how your sister's death came upon her in this place, nor indeed why she was left here. Vaughn and Tessel, too, were looking around the small space with fresh eyes. You think there's a hidden passage in here, Tessel stated. Aspen felt a smile lift one corner of his mouth. I do. I think the vampires enter here, and that the guards fear their allies too much to come inside and clear away what they leave behind. This door was the only one locked. I suspect that is not so much to keep poor Violetta in, as to keep the vampires out. Tessel suddenly looked nervous. So if we find this passage, what do we do? I mean, there's no way the three of us can face even one vampire, much less several. We have no idea what we'd be walking into. I remember the war, too. She swallowed hard, forcing herself to continue. My boyfriend and I were on the other side. Then. It seemed like they would win. You know. Her blue eyes begged understanding from the two men, and though Aspen felt his heart clench painfully, he sucked in a breath between his teeth and let it out slowly, nodding acceptance. After all, he had also believed Akuji would win. In the end, he too had tried to change sides. Seeing that neither of her companions was ready to castigate her for the choices she had made in a different lifetime, Tessel continued hurriedly. I didn't really like it. I was ready to quit, but red light. Anyway, I saw what the vampires could do. I know I'd be all right eventually, but you too. The short woman shook her head, blonde braids swaying with the vigor of the motion. I'm not who I was then. And I'm glad. Her voice grew fierce. I can't just let you guys die because you're, natives. We need backup. We need a plan. A loud bang from the outer room interrupted her, as if a door had been slammed shut. They could suddenly hear the muffled words of many men, as well as the sounds of booted feet on the stone floor. One voice rose above the rest. "Roger." A hard hand beat on the door. "Roger, damn you. Where are you? Where are the keys? You'd better not be sleeping off another drunk in there, you." Multiple forceful blows resounded, drowning out the last words. Aspen turned back to his companions. "We're out of time. Find that passage." Tessel looked suddenly resigned, while Vaughn's face hardened into determination as he began moving swiftly around the small space. Tessel spoke. "As soon as they see us, they can use arrest to send us to prison, but at least we'd have a chance there. We just have to wait a day for our trial, and I know Aspen can afford a lawyer, so." Tessel's voice trailed off as a stone beneath her hand depressed with a click. Aspen chuckled darkly. "They didn't even try to hide it well. After all, if the vampire's dinner goes to them, all the better." He looked over at Tessel. "That system is for travelers and wealthy natives, and only if the guard is honest. These guards are anything but, and if they send Vaughn and me to prison, it's a death sentence as certain as the bite of any undead. Not to mention that there's apparently a price on my head." He reached out and pushed harder on the stone. A narrow slice of the wall popped free and swung wide. "I very much doubt any of them will follow us even a single step into that passage. We must go." Behind him, punctuating his words, came more and more vicious blows against the heavy door, which now shook in its frame. A furious roar came from beyond, and an axe blade broke through the wood, then was pulled back with a grunt. The dim light filtering through the broken slit darkened as an eye peered through. Aspen swore. "They only need to be able to see us clearly to cast the spell. It takes less than 30 seconds. Go, go." None too gently, he shoved his friends through the opening. Vaughn slipped through easily, though Tessel's armor stuck for a worryingly long moment before scraping into the wider space beyond. Aspen followed immediately, pulling the stone panel closed by the handle embedded on the inside. Darkness surrounded them, silent and thick. Aspen growled softly. "Does anyone have a light?" Tessel, of course, had a glowstone. She also had a thief's lantern, with a series of built-in panels that allowed only as much light as they wanted, and at only the angle they needed. Of course, she didn't really need it, since she, like Rouge, had dark vision as a result of her dwarven heritage. Vaughn, however, only had low-light vision, much like a cat or raccoon, so while even a faint light was enough to allow him to see quite well, he did need that light. Aspen, on the other hand, was blind as a caveworm. Literally, since the worms used tremor sense to move around, and Aspen abruptly found that his life sense, which had been blocked by whatever spell or blessing was on the interior of the guardhouse, was working again. Well, working somewhat. It was still limited, but he could at least sense 20 or 30 feet to either side and in front of them. He reminded himself, however, that he couldn't sense undead at all, so his renewed ability to see worms, roots, and moles wasn't going to help him avoid vampires. Thus it was that they began to make their very cautious way forward. Aspen could at least tell them which branching of the narrow dirt tunnels led to close-by rockfalls or dead ends, so they were able to avoid a few of these. Vaughn led the way, using the lantern and perfect navigation to guide them when Aspen's life sense couldn't reach far enough. Tessel brought up the rear, her dark vision, allowing her to watch behind them in case something managed to flank them or come up from one of the short tunnels they thought were empty. Between the three of them, they managed to make their way through what seemed an eternity of crisscrossing burrows. The first indication that they were coming to the end of the maze was the sound of chanting. From the rhythm, it sounded like one voice was speaking, and a loud chorus of others would repeat the words back to them. Tessel stopped, touching Aspen's sleeve, and Aspen reached out to hold Vaughn. "It sounds like church liturgies. My Nona makes me go with her every Christmas, and that definitely sounds familiar," the half-dwarf muttered. Aspen frowned. He knew some of the more organized religions had meetings at which a priest or priestess spoke, but neither Atai nor Gina encouraged that kind of thing. They preferred when their people came to them as needed, rather than on a pro forma basis. "Where there are people, there's a way out," he murmured. "I doubt there are that many vampires, and they were never good at acting in concert. The fact that they usually fought alone is the main reason we were able to kill as many as we did." Vaughn, whose people had stayed out of the war, as had all the other elven races, offered a nod of understanding. Then these should be humans? Aspen frowned. Not necessarily. The vampires often had minions, some of whom were very inhuman indeed. Let me see. He closed his eyes, cautiously reaching out with his limited life sense toward the noise. He found people. Many, many people. All natives from the varied glow of their spirits, since they lacked the cascade of numbers that mark travelers. All of their spirits were corrupted in the same way Leonard's had been, to one extent or another. His eyes flashed open. There's a chamber. There. He pointed with a hand which he saw was shaking slightly. He clenched it into a fist and let it drop back to his side. Filled with people. All of them are being eaten by the same force that was devouring Leonard. Vaughn paled, even his fierce thirst for vengeance dimmed slightly by the memory of their erstwhile prisoner's gory fate. Tessel, who had only heard about it secondhand, looked disgusted but not frightened. You mean we found those maskers? The ones Rouge is after? Do you think she's here? A clear note of hope rang out in the traveler's voice. Aspen shook his head. I don't know. She was supposed to follow her traveler acquaintance, but there are none of your people in that room, only mine. I would recognize Rouge herself, and she is not within my sight. It seems likely that they keep travelers and natives separate, if only because most of your people seem to view mine as disposable toys. Tessel winced but nodded. That does make sense, she said reluctantly. Vaughn, meanwhile, was staring as if his gaze could bore through the wall. Only natives. Then, is there a chance this is where they brought my sister's son? Can you tell if any of these are captives? Aspen frowned and sent his thoughts questing back out into the space beyond, finding himself pressed hard against the wall, as if that would extend his range enough to matter. I don't know, he told the elf hesitantly. There do seem to be some children, as sadly eroded as the rest of these fools, but whether they are here voluntarily or otherwise, I could not say. He lifted a now steady hand and pointed to the right. They are that way, however, and it seems as good a way to go as any other. Vaughn's face lit up in a ferocious smile. How much farther is it? Tessel muttered. The trio had been walking for a good 10 minutes already, and there was no sign of a door, a portal, or even a crack in the earthen walls. I don't know, Aspen gritted out frustrated. One thing he had noticed about travelers was that they did not deal well with delays. They always seemed to want immediate action, even if acting now was more dangerous and likely to bring lesser rewards. Vaughn was trailing his left hand along the wall, looking like he wanted to simply try tunneling through it. They had passed the area with the children quite some time ago, and Aspen had had to close down his life sense to the barest fraction of even its current limited reach. The young spirits only 10 or 15 feet through that wall were so riddled with holes and blight that he could practically smell the rancid scent of rot rising from them. When the young wood elf had learned that those pathetic young spirits had been left behind quite some time ago, he was furious. Aspen had to admit that he could probably convince the roots supporting the walls to move aside for them, but the odds were too great that they would immediately be discovered and captured or killed, or worse yet, fed to whatever monstrosity was devouring this gruesome feast. At last, Aspen had to admit defeat in spite of his concerns. He paused, sighing. We should have gone left, I think. I can still barely catch glimpses of a few of them at the edge of my range, but that's it. The question is, do we go back or forward? Vaughn's reply was instantaneous. Back. We must see if my nephew is among those children. Tessel shook her head. Forward. We already know there's an overwhelming force behind us, and if we do get into that cavern, what can we actually do? I'm sure we could kill a lot of low-level NP, she coughed awkwardly. Natives, but what happens when the high-level ones show up looking for the people making all the noise? Vaughn's hands clenched at his sides. Just because you're too frightened to. Aspen's hand sliced through the air, cutting the boy off. She's right, Vaughn. Our deaths will not free your nephew or bring any prisoners to safety. Plus, he looked into the young man's rebellious gray eyes, Tessel has no reason to be afraid. When she dies, she wakes up a few hours later, little worse for wear. She's thinking of us, and you would do well to remember it. He could practically hear the elf's teeth grind as the muscles in his jaw clenched, but Vaughn finally looked down in defeat. I know you're right, he muttered. But knowing I could be so close, and doing nothing. Setting a gentle hand on the young man's tense shoulder, Aspen gripped it reassuringly. We will find a way to save your nephew, if he is there to be saved. He felt the muscles under his palms spasm at the reminder that, in all honesty, they were probably already too late. I believe we can save those children, but we must do it wisely. Remember that someone must care for them once they are released. It's not enough to save their bodies if their spirits die. Nodding jerkily, Vaughn stepped back. Fine, he said, swiping at some dampness on his cheek. Let's go then. It was another 10 or 15 minutes before Aspen once again sensed anything besides worms and other small, nearly mindless creatures. When the first questing tendrils of his life sense touched the blazing spirit, he flinched back, both physically and psychically. Vaughn and Tessel immediately stopped, turning to Aspen with expectant expressions. He held up a forefinger for silence before cautiously reaching out again. This time, before he even reached the spirit, he could sense something like waves of heat coming from it. He stopped, close enough to see the shape of it, but not actually contacting it. I don't know what I'm seeing. He shook his head, whispering even though they had been talking in near normal tones for quite some time. I can't even tell if it's a native or a traveler. Or, he squinted, as if his eyes had anything to do with that strange second sight, if it's an animal or a humanoid. Whatever it is, though, it's more powerful than anything I've ever viewed before. Also, his stomach sank as he finally managed to adjust a bit to what he was seeing, and noticed something horrifyingly familiar. It's being eaten by the same thing that is devouring the maskers. Tessel's blue eyes were huge, and she looked like she couldn't decide whether to be excited or worried. Is it the masker boss, do you think? If we keep going, are we going to have to face it? Vaughn cast a longing look down the cramped passage behind them. The walls and ceiling had been slowly closing in for quite some time, and Tessel's broad shoulders and pauldrons were beginning to scrape against them rather alarmingly as she walked. Perhaps we should go back, the elf offered hopefully. If this thing is as powerful as you say, then fighting some common cultists might be better than. Aspen shook his head. Not some. Hundreds. Perhaps thousands, though I couldn't see far enough to confirm that. This thing, powerful as it is only one being. All we have to do is avoid it. Tessel rolled her eyes, muttering, yes? All we have to do. As if it's ever that easy. Aspen cast her a quelling look. She gave him a rebellious look in return, but sighed and nodded. You're the boss. And that's something I never thought I'd say to a native. She shrugged apologetically, and he quirked a smile at her. Vaughn? He looked back at the young elf, who dug the toe of his soft leather boot into the floor. Fine, the elf mumbled finally, sounding like a child who has just been denied a favorite treat. Then he cleared his throat, straightened his shoulders, and looked up, clear eyes meeting Aspen's. I mean, yes. If that's what we need to do. Aspen felt his heart clench in his chest. How many times had he and Lark had conversations like this, as she was growing from a child to a woman? How familiar was that expression of determination, of readiness to be the adult they so longed to be, while at the same time feeling all the rebelliousness of a teenager and the longing for reassurance that every child felt when they were frightened? He had to draw in a sharp breath against the pain of memory, forcing down the image of light brown eyes that overlaid the gray eyes watching him so earnestly. Fighting down the urge to give the boy a hug, he nodded sharp confirmation. Forward once again then, but we need to be more cautious. He looked over at Tessel. I know it makes you uncomfortable, but could you? The half-dwarf sighed, and a moment later she was once again clad in starlight and shadow, with the train of her dress trailing back down the passage so far that it vanished around a curve. Tessel started hauling in the yards of silken fabric with a long-suffering expression. It took several minutes for her to wind the cloth around her waist and bare shoulders, and when she was done, she sent him a look from beneath her pale golden brows that would have shriveled a lesser man. If we get into combat while I'm wearing this, I'm going to be worthless. It's meant for a mage, standing at the back and looking pretty. I'm more tank than spellcaster, and the only distance spell I have is fireball. Her tone suggested that if he had anything to say about it, he should really keep his opinions to himself. Aspen just nodded, and for the first time in quite a while, the soft silver shimmer of a stat gain appeared around him in the darkness. At Tessel's questioning look, he shrugged. Wisdom, I think. She laughed. It was a good thing that the half-dwarf had changed, because soon enough the rough dirt walls were so tight that Vaughn was the only one still slipping easily through the passageway. Aspen even had to gently feed Mana to a few large roots to convince them to move aside so his wider shoulders could get by. The more open areas were gone now, and what they walked through seemed more like a naturally formed crevice than anything created by man. The ground beneath their feet was half hard-packed soil and half slabs of natural stone. When Aspen thought it was a toss-up between whether he or Tessel would become hopelessly stuck or the fissure would simply fizzle out, he finally sensed the strange lack of life that generally indicated an open area ahead of them. Of course, given their current situation, a lack of life could also mean a plethora of undead, but he chose not to dwell on that at the moment. He was about to speak when Vaughn, who was well in the lead by now, his short stature and slim frame allowing him much more freedom of movement than Aspen's height or Tessel's dwarven breadth, reappeared in front of them, his finger held over his lips to indicate that they needed to be silent. "There's an opening ahead, I think," he hissed almost inaudibly. "I can smell clearer air and perhaps hear some sounds, though faintly." Aspen and Tessel exchanged glances, and the half-dwarf made a face, tugging unhappily at the beautiful, still perfectly clean and intact garment wrapped around her body. "I'm still not going to be of much help," she muttered, fingers twitching, as if the desire to dig into her inventory and change was almost more than she could bear. Aspen nodded. "Stay at the rear, then. Try not to get pulled into combat until you can change, but if you must, stick to Fireball and any defensive spells you have." She shrugged. "I have shell and resistance, but I can't cast spells through shell. That's part of why I never bothered with any more distance spells. They don't do me any good when I'm fully buffed." He nodded. "All right. Cast a fireball if you think we need the help, but otherwise just use shell and resistance. Stay safe and flee if you must." She smiled a little, casting him a small salute, though he wasn't certain she intended to follow his instructions. Travelers were far too cavalier with their own safety, since even death was no true deterrent. Aspen turned back to Vaughn. "You'll be our scout, of course. When you're able, stealth and go through if you can. Don't try to engage anyone." He hesitated. "Have you ever seen a vampire before?" The young elf shook his head. "They just look like people for the most part. The biggest giveaways are the sharp teeth and the red or black eyes." Aspen grimaced a bit. "Sometimes the lower level ones, or ones that haven't eaten recently, will smell too. They have an odor of old loam and decay. Mostly though, they just look like everyone else. So it doesn't matter if you only see one person. Don't think you can take them, or even that we can take them. The best way to kill a vampire is to surprise them and get some wood into them. Once the wood is in their flesh, they can't shift forms, and a large enough group can usually decapitate them." Aspen slid a hand over the wall beside him, dripping mana in its wake. The wall seemed to boil as tiny tendrils of roots thrust out and curled into his palm like kittens seeking comfort. He stroked them, and they fell into his hand, instantly turning into sharp, hard splinters. In thanks, he gently pushed a few more drops of mana into the donor trees. He turned as best he could in the confined quarters and handed each of his companions a small bundle of the sharp sticks. "Hopefully no one felt that," he murmured, "but it needed to be done. I should have thought of it long ago." Aspen tucked his own wood fragments into his belt, then warned them again. "Get the wood into them. Once they can't shift, we may be able to win. Don't worry if you're not sure if they're a vampire or a human. First, anyone out there is likely to be an enemy, and second, these splinters won't do anyone any lasting damage. Unless," he smiled lopsidedly, "you manage to get it in an eye. Which is probably a good place for it, honestly. I once saw a vampire rip off his own arm to get rid of the wood embedded there, and he killed 30 soldiers after doing so." Both Vaughn and Tessel were looking much less confident now, which to Aspen meant he had done his job. He pointed down the dark crevice ahead. "Now then." A muffled scream echoed from the path in front of them, interrupting him. From the place in Aspen's mind where the traveler's party chat emerged, he heard a too familiar voice squeak out, "Rouge?" The little cry was faint and terrified. Swearing, Aspen forgot everything he had just been saying and sprang into motion. His strong hands shoved Vaughn, who was between him and the source of that sound, down flat on the ground. Then Aspen gathered himself, using his long legs and powerful muscles to leap over the young elf's prone body. A second after the sound reached them, Aspen was gone.